This is Cross Currents. I'm Julie Kane, in for Hanat Baba. 40 years ago today, more than 100 people with disabilities took over a San Francisco federal building. They vowed to stay until the government agreed to sign a long-awaited piece of civil rights legislation, Section 504, the precursor of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
For the disabled, the signing of Regulation 504 is the difference between living and existing.
We're more than handicapped without these laws. We're crippled.
Taking cues from the civil rights movement of the 60s, the disability community rose to fight segregation and discrimination throughout the 1970s. KALW's True Quinn brings us this often untold story of a movement catalyzed right here in the Bay Area.
Ever wonder what that building is connected to the Ashby BART station in South Berkeley?
Concord.
Go up the ramp and you'll be entering the Ed Roberts campus. There are extra wide elevators and big buttons at the base of the elevator to select your floor. The campus is spacious with lots of natural light. Every bit was designed carefully for people with disabilities.
Really, what is disability?
That's Dimitri Belser. He's the executive director of the Center for Accessible Technology. He's also president of the Ed Roberts campus.
Disability is a disconnect between people's abilities and the built environment. I think a lot of disability is actually affected by architecture.
The campus was constructed using universal design, making it one of the easiest spaces to get around in. Built to memorialize Ed Roberts, the center continues his work for people with disabilities.
He had had polio as a teenager, and he used an iron lung for part of his life. So he was quadriplegic. He had very, very little mobility. So a pretty significant disability. And this is in the 1950s and the early 1960s, and this is the time when most people with disabilities with his kind of a disability ended up institutionalized.
Roberts was the first person with severe disabilities to attend UC Berkeley. At the time, the dorms weren't accessible, so Roberts lived in Cowell Hall, the school's hospital. Other students with disabilities eventually began living there too.
This is also during the time of the free speech movement, which is when students were starting to talk about their rights to protest and their rights to speak on whatever topic they wanted, and that students had rights.
A group of students living in Cowell Hall, all quadriplegic, dubbed themselves the Rolling Quads, and they had something to say. They realized they were not patients, but an oppressed minority. From lowering countertops and telephones to widening bathroom doors, the Rolling Quads opened up the campus to people in wheelchairs, making UC Berkeley one of the most accessible in the country. Beyond structural changes, Ed Roberts and the Rolling Quads started the independent living movement.
It was a very radical concept that people with disabilities, how can someone who can't dress themselves or bathe themselves or feed themselves, how can that person live independently?
The Center for Independent Living was the first of its kind back in 1972. It was a place where people could go to find housing, jobs, and get advice from one another. There are now 403 of these centers across the country. Belster lost his vision in his 20s and says the work done by people like Ed Roberts allows him to live independently and freely.
I can tell you, as a blind person, if I had been born in the 1920s, my life would have been very different because I probably would have been in some sort of sheltered workshop, or I would have been on relief, you know, on disability, on Social Security my entire life and not been able to work. And I've had a whole career because of the work that people like Ed Roberts did.
Catherine Kudlick, historian and director of the Paul K. Longmore Institute on Disability, says Berkeley's push for independence in the 60s led to a national battle for civil rights in the 70s. In 1974, the Rehabilitation Act was passed by Congress to benefit veterans returning home from Vietnam with a disability. But one section, Section 504, affected the larger community.
It was the first time civil rights language had been applied to disability, and that's where it's significant. So essentially, at the bottom of it all was that any organization, that could be a hospital, a school, a university, the post office, federal buildings, anything, had to be made accessible to people with disabilities. And this was the first time that that was said.
But both the Nixon and Ford administrations refused to sign Section 504. When President Carter took office in January of 1977, people were hopeful. Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare Joseph Califano said he would sign it, but...
I will sign a set of 504 regulations by early May.
Now
I will do
it now.
Not May, now.
By April of 1977, people refused to wait any longer.
It all started this morning here at the old federal building on 50 Fulton when an incident took place outside. Immediately after that demonstration this morning, the handicapped started invading the building.
It's the old one thing, it's the first really militant thing that disabled people have ever done. And we feel like we're building a real social movement. And we want people to listen to us. We have tried negotiations, they do not work. And at this point, we are non-negotiable. We want those regulations signed.
News outlets call them an army of cripples. This army, the deaf, blind, people in wheelchairs, with canes, gathered and occupied 10 federal offices across the U.S. The nation shouted. After just a few days, the occupations in D.C. and the rest of the nation fizzled, but not in San Francisco, where over 150 people gathered, including Ed Roberts.
We're down to the bottom line, down to the basic issue here. Are we going to perpetuate segregation in our society?
The sit-in at the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare offices continued and was able to go on for nearly a month.
The Bay Area had this culture of collaboration in place already, and people, there was a real sense of common understanding and common purpose, and people had met each other and cared about each other. And even if they didn't know, the sort of mood of the time was to advocate for rights and to think about groups that weren't getting their rights.
Dennis Phillips thinks back to 40 years ago and remembers the Black Panthers bringing him and other demonstrators supplies during the building takeover.
They bought bandages, soap, all kinds of food. We're talking about beans and rice, chicken, turkey, ham.
24 at the time, Phillips had a specific job during the occupation, chief morale officer. He says there was one reason for this.
Nobody had a bigger mouth than I did.
Phillips made his rounds each day to keep the vibration up, he says. It was the first time he got to know people with varying disabilities.
504 is victory here. We ain't leaving nowhere. Rolling in my wheelchair now. Feeling victory in my bones right now. I'm empowered by the sounds of faith. Calling 504 is here to stay.
Phillips says protesters used their different abilities to help one another.
You know, we were their ears and they were our eyes, our hands and feet to do stuff. And it was a cooperation of empowerment that was so strong and so powerful and fearless. To me, that was important because society could actually learn from this and do the same thing and become empowered to do greater things than they're doing now.
There was a moment during the occupation when the hot water was shut off, along with the phone lines. Anyone who left the building was not allowed back in. The occupiers had no way to send messages, so deaf people stood at the windows and used sign language to communicate to people below in the street.
They signed everything from grocery lists or medical requests to, you know, this is what's going on inside. And so interpreters outside then would read the signs and then write down the press releases, and they got the word out to the media. So it was this amazing moment of cooperation.
After the nearly month-long occupation, Secretary Califano signed Section 504. Under law, people with disabilities now had a right to accessible public buildings and education, the right to federal employment, housing, and health care. Outside of the building, at San Francisco Civic Center, activist and organizer Kitty Cohn spoke to a jubilant crowd.
We show strength and courage and power and commitment.
Solidarity.
That we the shut-ins or the shut-outs, we the hidden, supposedly the frail and the weak, that we could wage a struggle at the highest level of government and win.
Kovic says getting Section 504 signed laid the groundwork for the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, which banned discrimination in all areas of public life. Kovic also points out, one unique thing about the disability community is that anyone can join at any time.
You know, you could have a disease, a car accident, just a random thing that happens to you, and you could need all of these accommodations and benefits. And if you get older, you know, you're going to need all of it anyway. We're making an investment in our society when we have something like the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans has a disability. Some you can see, some you can't. Kuthick says that just because the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, exists, doesn't mean discrimination and segregation, intentional or otherwise, doesn't happen.
The way a society treats its most vulnerable citizens is really an indication of the worth of that society. And if you basically toss out groups because they're not powerful or not important or not worth it, one, you know, it's just morally wrong. But two, you're missing out on some people that really have amazing insights and amazing things to contribute to society. But you're going to need to put some basic parameters in place.
There are still a lot of barriers for people with disabilities. Not all businesses comply with the ADA. If you have a disability, you're more likely to be unemployed, more likely to live in poverty. Civil rights language written into law is an important foundation, says Kuthick, but it takes more than that to wrestle with stigma and the built environment. In Berkeley, I'm True Gwynn for Cross Currents.